For more information on XX Digitus Duo, you can visit their website at www.xxdigitusduo.com. This is Zello Zellos Marchant for KVU News.
KVU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of What Now? Tuesday, November 21st at 6 p.m. at Revolution Hall in Portland. What Now? Is an event and movement created in the days after the November 2016 elections to channel collective frustration and fear into positive direct action in the community. This year's What Now event offers multiple engagement opportunities for Portlanders of all communities, backgrounds, and ages. Again, that's What Now, Tuesday, November 21st at 6 p.m. at Revolution Hall, 1300 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KVU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the film screening of Living While Dying on Tuesday, November 28th, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland. Everything you wanted to know about conscious dying but were afraid to ask, Living While Dying is a documentary film exploring how different people are preparing for death and reevaluating their relationship to dying. Again, that's Living While Dying on Tuesday, November 28th, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Time is now 6:01 p.m. You're listening to Labor Radio on KBOO.fm.
Yes, indeed.
90.7.
Yeah.
I'm Nick Bubb, and with me is...
Michael Cathcart.
Mike, how are you? It's been a while.
Yeah, Nick, it's great to see you again. I'm glad that you're back. I know you've been out traveling the world.
And I've seen a few that I finally cashed in. I took some of the fruits of my labor and went and saw a few things, but it's, nice. It's great to be back in the studio, especially since we've got a very special guest tonight.
Yes, indeed. For the folks who are loyal listeners of the show, you may remember last month, about exactly a month ago, we conducted part one of our two-part interview with City Council candidate Philip J. Wolf. And tonight we are going to continue that with a second part of the interview. Philip is joining us in studio right now. Good evening, Philip.
Good evening. Good to see you both again.
Yes, indeed.
This is amazing shoes, by the way, that you got. I just have to mention that really quick. I can't stop looking at them.
for the radio audience, Nick is wearing shoes that are covered, totally gold, and the bottoms are basically multicolored flashing lights.
I'm a walking Christmas tree right now, yeah. If you will.
It's this time of year, it's safe, though. You need to be able to be seen.
Yeah, well, I did ride the motorcycle in, so it's an added layer of visibility with these.
That's
so.
Right. There you go. It's perfect for this time
That's
of year.
That's right. Smart.
Yeah. Thank you.
They're pretty amazing.
So, Michael?
Yeah, I mean, what is this? The week of Thanksgiving, we're running right into the holiday season here.
Oh, man.
Portland is looking beautiful with all the lights everywhere. I think the Christmas tree is going to be lit up downtown next week. And, you know, there's a lot of flashy things happening downtown, one of which, and this is a terrible segue, we're going to jump right in. You may remember last month, we ended our discussion talking about housing issues in Portland. Something that has come up since then is the announcement of a new plan by a developer to build the largest skyscraper in the city, a massive, I think like something like 26 or multiple, more than that story, glass shiny yeah. structure on the old post office site downtown. And that, I mean, you know, you may have different opinions on what it should look like or whether or not that'll add to the skyline or not, but regardless of that, it will definitely add more people into living in the downtown area.
Because we don't have enough yet.
Yeah, right. As if this city isn't already congested enough.
good one. Yeah, yeah. I definitely wanted to talk about that for sure. That skyscraper, first off, as I was reading an article about it, it was caught off guard just a little bit. I almost caught myself like, wait, no. As I'm reading it, making my way through, first off, that's just not the way that I see Portland in my mind. You know, right. I see Portland as this, you know, kind of almost old and old-fashioned, really, really community feel. Yeah, of course, we have maybe great buildings, but they're not these new shiny skyscrapers that feel like they're just made for rich people, you know? It's those things fit in San Francisco, they fit in British Columbia, you know? It's nice and fancy and big and shiny there, and that's perfect. But the way that Portland is supposed to be, the way that we envision Portland, it just doesn't have things like that. I have a lot of concerns about trying to build skyscrapers like that. And like you said, it's going to bring more people, but of course it's going to bring in then more cars and more congestion. And we have to figure out where people are going to park and where they're going to live, what they're going to do. It's just no across the board.
Right. And I mean, if you look at the likely demographics of folks who would live in that building. I mean, this is not to generalize, but it will, because it will be so fancy and so new, it will probably attract people, you know, have higher rents. It will attract
with
people
a lot of money.
Exactly. Yep. And people with a lot of money tend to drive cars, tend not to ride the bus that often. And that, of course, may be a horrible generalization, but it seems to be, for the most part, true.
No. Yeah. And I definitely want to point out something else, too, is the fact is right now we have so many issues with a disparity with the richest and the poorest in the city, the way that this class disparity is functioning. And so if we're just going to put a skyscraper into the building, it's just going to further that disparity and make the problem much worse. Right. I really wanted to make sure we mentioned that.
Right. And I mean, and I may be underinformed here, but I know that the developer has mentioned that as sort of a trade-off for getting to build the largest skyscraper in our city, he has said he will do so, or he will also build affordable housing elsewhere in town. Do you know the specifics of that, or?
Yeah. He was discussing about affordable housing, you know, as sort of this gift to the community. I don't know about the accessibility to that, though. I definitely heard the word affordable, but not accessible. Right. So, you know, that's a big thing for me, is I want to be sure that affordability is always matched with accessibility. And it really, I mean, regardless, I don't want to see this huge skyscraper in the city. That's not even, you know, like a justification for it. I just don't want it, period. So,
yeah, and that is something that we discussed last month, the difference between, you know, quote unquote, affordability and true accessibility on a lot of fronts, but in housing, you know, affordable housing is a term that can be thrown around. It may have been, you know, whitewashed in a lot of ways, but what's the threshold for affordability? What does that really mean, and who actually has access to that?
And it's super important, that the affordability factor, because somebody's got to work jobs, and if you're living in Salem commuting in to work these jobs, you know, then that's creating even more traffic. I mean, it's stressful on you. I mean, 40 hours away from the family, that's already long enough. I mean, that's what we fought to get it down to that. But when you're also spending 2 hours a day in traffic on the road,
if not more,
if not more, then, you know, when do you get to see, when do you get to put your kids to bed? You know, when do you get to spend time with the family?
Yeah, you don't have a true work-life balance there at all.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely.
And we saw the amount of pushback or ire directed towards that Burnside Bridgehead building, the giant black orb on the east side of the Burnside Bridge. I mean, you know, obviously the new building will be shiny and full of glass, but can you imagine the change to our skyline and the pushback that people will have once it's built? People may not be thinking about it now, but once it's built, I mean, that'll just change the look of Portland forever, and it will invite more tall, giant buildings.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great point. And, you know, then that's still supporting, you know, this whole commercialization of Portland, trying to make it bigger and better and more competitive. It's not what Portland is about. We're supposed to stay local. We're supposed to be supporting each other. It's supposed to be an intimate setting where people are all really in the community. Here we have, you know, proposals and plans that are trying to individualize us. You don't know the faces that are around you. You don't know the community that's around you. I've been to San Francisco. I've been to Las Vegas. I've been to New York. I've been to Amsterdam. I've been places around the world, and I've seen these big cities, and this is just not the vision of Portland.
No. And, you know, speaking of the vision of Portland for the future, on your campaign website, there's a quote that I wrote down here. That says, industrialized nations made a terrible mistake when they turned to the automobile as an instrument of urban mobility. And, you know, like we were just saying, a new massive building for wealthier people will likely provide an increase in car traffic in the already congested areas. So I'd like to turn for the bulk of this discussion towards the issues of surrounding transit in the city. Everyone who lives in the city or anyone who lives around the city knows full well that transportation has gotten more difficult over the last, you know, decade or more. And it seems in every single day it gets harder and harder to move around the city. So as someone who, you know, if you are elected to city council, do you have specific proposals? Are there certain issues surrounding transportation that you see as the top of your list that need to be dealt with right away to help alleviate travel time and congestion in the city?
Yeah, I do. So that's a great question, a fair question. I don't think that there is a simple answer to it. From what I've seen, just living here almost 10 years, living in the downtown area and just getting a feel for how the city works, using my bike, using the bus system, using, you know, the various forms of transportation we already have. Just from that experience alone, just going back to that industrialization, you know, I love that you brought that quote up because I love that quote so much. You know, more cars, more problems. We have this congested downtown area that already has public transportation there. We already have the MAX system. We already have the bus. We already use Uber and we do whatever. And there's still this permanent congestion that seems to exist in the downtown area. So if I were to, you know, become commissioner, I think prioritizing wanting to, well, first of all, focus on this highway expansion project that they're talking about, this $500 million project out the window, number one. I would want to hold that out for now because there's a lot more options that we need to prioritize first. We need to be looking at solving things in the downtown city area, not what's around it, not what the freeways are doing, but adding transportation and fixing the transportation we have in the city, because that's going to trickle out and affect the way that traffic works outside of the city as well. We have so many people that work fine and when they're driving until they make their way into the city, and then they hit this congestion, they hit this chaos. And I understand why to make things better, but I don't see this as a priority in making real sustainable change for the future. So I think changing the focus into the inner city first would be my priority.
Yeah, it's interesting about the roads too, because I was talking with my friend Katie. Katie, I hope you're listening. Hi.
Hi, Katie.
She was saying that if you build more roads, the actual studies indicate that people just fill them up. The traffic doesn't really get better. You just get more cars on the road and people take the public transportation less. So the problem doesn't actually get solved by that.
It's true. Right. And just to provide context for the listeners out there, Philip mentioned the expansion project, specifically discussing about expanding, adding more lanes to I-5 running through the central part of the east side in Portland, which, you know, anyone who drives around knows that it is a major choke point around the city.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, it's... as much as that may seem like a solution, exactly like Nick said, study after study has shown that adding more lanes just increases driving. You know, there's no way around that. That's just the reality. If people think that there's
absolutely
more room,
yeah, and we have to think about it. You know, realistically, we have deaths that are being caused by cars, right? We have problems being caused by cars. It seems like it's a simple answer. We could focus on the cars first. My vision for downtown and for the city area is that it's walkable, that it's bikeable, that it's transportable, that you can paddle boat or, you know, do whatever, but function within that city, you know. And I don't want to so much ban cars, but I definitely want to make it open to take away the dependence on cars so that we can function within the city, that we can move about freely without that congestion. You know, speaking of other countries, like I've said, we have huge, huge, huge cities that function so much smoother than the way Portland does. And so trying to keep an open mind about the way that we approach it, I think taking all of those ideas into consideration is so important.
I mean, it seems only prudent to make our transportation system resilient, you know, to provide, instead of doing what we Americans love to do so much, which is focus solely on one particular mode of, you know, whether it's transportation or economic thing, or whatever it is, and just invest entirely in that. We need to have a resilient system that allows multimodal transportation. You can go by bike, by foot easily, by train, by bus, and maybe, you know, some cars in there as well. But like allowing for if traffic, you know, car traffic is completely stopped, that there are still ways to get around the city without everything coming to a crashing halt. And
yeah, definitely. Yeah, I agree.
You mentioned that you've been to some of the cities in the world. I also studied abroad in the Netherlands, and they've got excellent transportation as far as biking, whereas here we've got huge parking garages. They have like massive garages of bicycles, just like thousands of bicycles it'll hold.
Yes. Yeah, yes, amazing. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, that's a great point. When I actually was traveling, I was traveling from Amsterdam to Paris, the other way around, from Paris to Amsterdam, and just the transport, the way that the trams and everything worked there, it was just beautiful. I felt like coming into Amsterdam, it was like this gorgeous experience, you know, and coming into Portland, we want something similar. You know, even if you have like people that are traveling on one bus or whatever, they're kind of just all going the same place. It was a whole different feel, like, oh, you're going to Amsterdam. Oh, me too. Come and sit with me. There was just a whole lack of stress that was there. You know, there was so many different ways to move about. There were transportation things happening all around me, you know, and you've seen it. You know exactly what I'm talking about. There's just a whole different approach in terms of transportation over there.
Oh, yeah. So much better. Like, you know, like you don't hear about people getting bus rider rage.
Transit rage.
Yeah, you don't hear about that. But road rage, I mean, that problem, the struggle is real.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Yes, I mean, yeah.
And it does seem like, I mean, just the ultimate goal for any city should be to, I mean, and this would take years, and it may not necessarily be the thing that can actually happen, but ultimately the goal should be that cities are car-free, that you can, you know, if cars still exist, whether in autonomous form or otherwise, you can get to the edges of the city where there are massive places to store your car, and then effective means of rail, bus, or otherwise transit to get into the core of the city, and effective ways to move around. Like, that is the vision, the future vision, I assume.
Absolutely. I also want to mention, just on the key of that in relation to cars being the issue, I know that people often bring up electric cars and hybrid cars, and that's a wonderful thing, but something that a lot of people don't know is once that battery dies, there's not an easy way to get rid of it. They're not recyclable most of the time, and so this is completely counter to the green energy that it's trying to start in the first place, and the whole Mother Earth, you know, thing that they are trying to support. And so I just see more and more cars getting built, and industries keep going and going and going, making more and more and more. We already have so many cars, you know, it's like enough, just stop.
And the way that cars are designed, just like any other piece of technology these days, I mean, it's planned obsolescence. You know, cars are designed so that they can't necessarily last forever. So you built you take all of these resources, put them into this unit where for the most part one person is operating it, that, you know, it could fit a lot more than that. And after 10 years, 15 years, it becomes completely ineffective and it's scrapped, or it's just completely left to rot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's absolutely. It's so sad for me to see, like, every day I'm walking around the downtown area and I see parking lots and whole lanes of downtown city that are just parked cars. And it's just been there all day, maybe the day before, maybe there's, you know, gas leaks and oil leaks, whatever, that are happening from old cars. And the worst that I see is these big SUVs, like people that drive the giant trucks and SUVs, and then they go into downtown and take this giant parking spot, and then they're just this an eyesore. I want it all out. I'm sorry. I feel like I'm about to just like soapbox on that.
But there's, I mean, like, there's amazing photos out there. They've done, you know, depictions of it where they'll take 100 people and they'll say, okay, this is what 100 people in, you know, individual cars looks like, and then they'll fill an entire, you know, 6 blocks of a road. Now here's what 100 people on a bus looks like, you know, now here's what 100 people on foot looks like, and it just continually gets smaller and smaller. Like the footprint of each one of those forms of transit becomes smaller and smaller as you move people out of individual vehicles and into communal, or, you know, community vehicles, or into modes of transit that are foot-based, you know, whether it's a bike or walking. And that sort of leads me into my next question, which is that, you know, one of the, we in this country and in this world love to tout techno fixes for problems that really are more systemic, that need to be, you know, you need to have a change in the way that we do systems thinking rather than just a band-aid techno fix. One of those that is being thrown out there constantly now is self-driving cars. Do both of you, either of you, have thoughts on whether or not that is a true solution, or if that is just adding more cars into a situation where we can't handle more cars?
I think that talking about that high technology and automatic cars, you know, it's a good idea, and it's an idea. My question is how this is going to impact, how this is going to be sustainable, how we're going to be able to really depend on that. And does that fit Portland infrastructure, the way that the city's already built? Does it fit with the things that we haven't yet fixed? Are we just going to lay another layer of transportation on things that aren't working and hope that that fixes everything? It doesn't really come up as an idea that I'm really comfortable with fully supporting right now. Absolutely.
Yeah. Nick, do you have thoughts?
I do, as a matter of fact. You know, I love automation. I love automation in all forms, you know, to make our lives easier, to do the things that we truly are passionate about, I think is fantastic. But the problem is it doesn't seem to play out that way. Like, I'm not working less hours now.
Right.
My whole life, you know, ever since reaching adulthood, actually a little bit before that, I've been working many hours, and I'm not reaping any benefits of the increase in production. I make more money now. But as far as time, you know, basically to live my life, I'm trading 40 hours a week and that I'll never get back, you know, in order to feed myself, in order to put a roof over my head, in order to drive a car that I don't really want to drive. But I don't, you know, the transit system as it is right now, I don't feel that I have that option. You know, being in construction, I work at different job sites. So it's, I mean, I've been lucky right now. I've got a long streak at Intel. But other than that, I move around frequently and, it's hard to plan for transit.
Absolutely. And
that's I definitely understand that perspective. I hear you on that for sure. And there are people who have, you know, maybe freelance jobs. They're required to have five different organizations in 5 hours that they have to reach. It doesn't fit the idea of public transportation always. You know, I definitely understand that there's a different situation for everybody. But what we're talking about is this congestion that's in the city, and just adding more things to that is gonna make it worse. Unless these are options to keep people functioning properly within the city and keeping cars, you know, outside, like you said, a certain area. You know, it's not someone's fault that they have a job that they need to drive, that they shouldn't be penalized for that, but it doesn't really, you know, address the issue of the congestion.
And if I wasn't clear, I love public transportation, but I also have to leave my house at 5 a.m. sometimes, and I'm just not, you know, I don't know what all service is available or not. I guess Google Maps has been super helpful now. I just plug that in when I need public transportation now. But yeah, I'm a huge fan.
But you know, then too, even just to bring it, since you mentioned the Google Maps and thing, we definitely it's definitely nice to have the schedules and know where to go. But when we're comparing that to, let's say, driving, trying to get things done faster.
Right.
When you're used to, you know, getting on the bus and then you can email and you can get things done. You could take your pictures. You can work while you're on the bus, you know, compared to driving.
Yeah.
You can't text. You can't even touch your phone. You know, you have to pay attention to where you're going to park. Can I park there for an hour or not? Am I going to be good? Where do I, you know, what do I do for work? It's just so stressful. That's just my, you know, personal comparison I wanted to make, but we can go to the next topic.
Well, actually, I mean, just to add on to that a little bit, there was a study that came out recently that I forget, it was somewhere between 40-60% of all trips made via rideshare, so like Uber, Lyft, you know, any of the various other companies out there, are being determined to be trips that would not have otherwise been made in car, like via car, were it not for the accessibility of the ride hailing systems.
Oh wow.
And so it sort of makes you think, like, as much as we try and add these solutions around individuals driving their own cars, it does kind of come back to the fact that, like, cars in general tend to take up more space and therefore create more congestion. And so as much as we think, like, well, you know, if self-driving cars, they can communicate, therefore they'll merge better and there won't be as much traffic, but still, if every single person is able to hail a self-driving car in the same way that they're able to hail an Uber, that means that there are constantly a pool of those cycling around, and every single person is going in an individual vehicle doing that. Whereas, like, yeah, obviously a lot of people need to, in the same way that you do, like when I go to play music, like I need to drive to places with a lot of equipment. There are times where you need to transport yourself around in a way that just does not work via public transit. Mm-hmm. But if we can...
Absolutely.
Start working towards limiting people driving on or moving around, just, you know, going to this place or that place, that could be done easily via transit, so that the majority of people on the roads are people who have to be driving, and then everyone else is in a bus or on a bike or on a train or something like that. That seems like that would be a better approach to then again building a more resilient sort of multimodal form of transit around the city.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Spot on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And let's see, just because I'm looking at the clock, and as is always the case.
Whoa.
I know. Like, we're at 6:23. We started at 6 o'clock, and we have 6 minutes left. So, anyways, transit is, of course, an issue that we could talk about forever. And just as, you know, since you are running to be a public official in the city, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you about your opinions on the Vision Zero campaign, Portland Bureau of Transportation's campaign to bring the number of traffic fatalities, transportation fatalities down to zero over, I forget the set amount of time that they've given themselves. But do you see that as...
I think it was 2025, I believe. Yeah.
That sounds right.
I definitely have thoughts on that. You know, I did briefly look at what was involved in the campaign, what their intention and what they're trying to do, but I don't think that this is going to solve issues. The cars are what is causing the death. You know, the car hits into somebody or something or some bike or some other car. If we're not getting rid of the cars, then we're not really getting rid of the problem of the deaths. And so maybe if we get rid of cars, you know, we could see them go down. And I definitely have to sit down and look at Vision Zero a lot more and see if there's, you know, ways that we can amend it. Just how it's being presented right now, I'm definitely not satisfied. You know, and as someone who lives in downtown and is in the city, I've experienced many near-death moments with the cars going on around me. I have to be so aware all the time people are zipping through the city. So, you know, it needs to be solved, but...
Absolutely.
I hear terms like, I'm unfamiliar with this. I guess I've been gone so long that I'm not up to speed.
Traveling the world.
But I hear catchy keywords like that, and it immediately makes me think an increase in citation-based income for the
city.
Absolutely.
I think you're not wrong about that.
Oh, yeah.
Enforcement is a major part of that. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I just completely... I'm worse than the traffic. I just completely derailed us.
No, not at all.
Yeah, tell me more about this Vision Zero, though, Mike, or anybody?
The idea is basically to... and there's a few different ways that they're looking to do that, but to create a situation where... There's no one dying while they're transiting around the city. So whether that's driving, biking, walking, you know, any other way of moving around the city, that people aren't, and as Philip said, like, people aren't getting hit by cars, essentially, because if you get hit by a bike, you most likely are not going to die. But so it's to bring the number of people, because every year a pretty scary number of people die just transiting around the city.
Wow.
And so to bring that down to zero is the vision. And so,
But you know, when we're thinking about police, when we're thinking about crime, when we're thinking about, you know, let's say, for example, a car does hit someone, that car is now like a weapon, right? I mean, we can definitely think that car is a weapon. So does that mean that all cars are like movable weapons in that sense? You know, there's different ways that you can take it.
Right. Just because we are now at 3 minutes till, I would love to jump into... there are so many more things that we could talk about with transit, and you know, we just barely scratched the surface of it. But just to take a broader view, you know, we cannot divorce our conversation from the fact that we are living through an era that is both terrifying and infuriating on the national and international political stage. So as someone running for city council in Portland and as a resident of Portland, do you have... What do you see as a way that Portland can stand as a beacon of hope and progress and hope for the future against, you know, in a very regressive era, very hateful era, very divided era of local, national, international politics and culture?
Yeah, great question.
Thank you.
If we look at history and the history of city council, we just have a chronic problem of underrepresentation. This is something that happens again and again and again, and this absolutely supports Trump and his vision. We want to take away rights. We want to strip people of their ability to speak freely. We want to continue to benefit the rich and to ignore the poor, you know, to use those words. And this is a problem we've had, you know, for many, many times, for many years. But I'm actually thrilled that this opportunity to run, because I'm running with a bunch of other amazing people who will be representing their communities. You know, I think that we can be a city council that's full of diversity and full of representation and change the game. We can include the city so much more and include the voice and the opinion of the people who actually live here. So I'm honestly excited at the chance to be voted in and to really make that change happen. I know that 140 years since the city council has been put in, we've never had a deaf person run. So right. I'm the first one in, you know, to do that. And I'm just thrilled for the opportunity to see the way that we can make the change happen through just the representation.
Yeah, we could have... Sorry, you go.
No, sorry. I mean, we're down to less than a minute now. I haven't seen anybody peeking through the window for the next show, but they do that. No, I was just going to say that, you know, the people might not be tying it together right now. How does this fit into labor? But one of the one of the most important things for labor is political activism.
Yep.
So if you're out there listening, you got some soul searching to do. You got to think about what policies and what representatives you want that are going to legislate for your needs at work. Who's going to get you more paid sick time? Who's going to get you more, you know, time off
to
live
your
life and spend time with your family, you know, while, you know. We all have a limited amount of time.
Yeah.
So if people have any questions, if people want to know more and they like what they've heard, how can they reach out and get a hold of you, and how can they support your cause?
Yep.
Yeah, so I do have a website, www.philip4portland2018.com, and that's Philip, P-H-I-L-I-P. So you can go ahead and click into any of the issues and goals that I have. I have both written and videos that are up there for people to watch. I give a sort of background of my experience and who I've been and who I am now and how Portland has changed me. And so I've just been trying to reach out with people on the ground and meet people face to face. Really, I'm here for everyone. I'm looking forward to hearing voices and seeing how I can represent people. So thank you for listening to me and thank you for listening to us.
Well, thank you for being
here. Thank you very much for being on the show, everyone. This has been Philip Wolf. And
I'm Michael Cathcart. This is
I'm Nick Bubb, and this has been Labor Radio. Coming up next, stay tuned. You don't want to miss Prison Pipeline.
Yes, indeed. Have a great night.
To you, the 9 to 5-er, just making your way home. To you.